Hey folks, I'm here today to tell you about Visible. Something unfortunate about wireless services, what you see isn't always what you get. But with Visible, what you see is what you get. No perception check required. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. If you're looking for a carrier that is upfront with no hidden fees, then go to Visible.com to make the switch. You don't need more than one line of wireless to save, and you're going to be getting unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Visible is the wireless carrier that's constantly operating from a zone of truth. In their quest for total transparency, Visible wants you to know the monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Dungeon Cast. I'm Brian.
And I'm William.
This is a podcast where we talk about everything tabletop role-playing games.
And today we are talking about designing a campaign.
One, two, three, four.
Hey, Brian.
Hey, Will.
How are you doing today?
I'm good. I'm feeling the creative energies are... I've stored them inside of me for the weeks I was sick, and now I'm right. going to release them into all these Dungeon Cast episodes
that we're recording today.
Yes, that's right. Nice. It's going to flood out into the audio and into your ears. So
fantastic.
Make a constitution saving throw, everyone.
Well, Brian, the patrons have spoken.
They have.
And we here at the Dungeon Cast have heard their call. In a single, semi-unanimous voice, their cry echoed from the very abyss itself, and it hath been divined.
Yes, and it swirls around in there a bunch. There's a lot of reflective points, and it blasts out cone style like a horn,
absolutely.
You know, in like an old Greek theater.
Yep.
And it resonated, and it my eardrums bled, but I'm now compelled to do what the patrons say.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So let it be thus.
Let it be thus.
So we're going to teach you guys how we go about designing a campaign. So I am beginning to see a pattern. Oh, yeah. I'm beginning to see a pattern from our patrons where they like to vote in Dungeon Master stuff.
Yeah. And, you know, a lot of our earlier episodes, the big hitters with the core audience, as I like to call all of you, were Dungeon Master campaign topics. There's a lot of popularity with those still on YouTube. And I think we've been pivotal as a community and a show, you know, helping new DMs birth themselves from the ether.
Right, absolutely.
And get the courage and the inspiration to run their own games. And we want to definitely continue that. So
yeah.
you were saying we've kind of done something like this before.
Yes, we have. I don't know what that episode was called. It would have been within the first 100 episodes of the show.
It's probably called Creating a Campaign.
Probably what it was called. But it's been a long time since we did any of those original Dungeon Mastering episodes.
Yeah, were those year one episodes?
Those were year one and two episodes.
Yeah. Now we're on year like six or seven.
Yeah. So it's probably a really good thing to get back to the subject and see what's changed, what's evolved, developed in our techniques, our styles, our outlooks over the last 5 years.
Yeah. Will and I have both finished our own campaigns and, you know, the scope is opened at this point for us.
So. For those of you who are curious about those old episodes, because I also had the thought, I was like, I'm sure there's people who, I don't know, have jumped in at episode 150 and never went back.
Sure, yeah.
You know?
I'm sure that there's, like, especially on YouTube, the topic you like is what you go look at first.
Right, exactly. But if you are curious about those old episodes, your best bet is to find the Dungeon Mastering playlist on YouTube. Otherwise, you could probably search them out on the podcast feed. Just look up Dungeon Mastering and should pull up all the ones that we titled that way.
Yeah. And if this is your first episode, welcome to the show. Please hit the like and subscribe if you're here from YouTube. And hi, it's nice to see all of you. Or if I don't see you, you see me. Is it nice to see me? Let me know in the comments. Should we get into it?
Let's get into it. Yeah. Okay. So I have a bullet list, as I do, and I have ordered it in the chronological order that I usually tackle when I'm writing up a campaign.
Okay.
So I was thinking that we could just go down it one thing at a time and talk about each point as they come. I want to preface this by saying that this is my personal style, my personal approach to campaign design. It may not be yours. In fact, I would imagine for most people, it definitely won't be theirs. But I'm sure that there are going to be parts to my style that will be useful and can be integrated or learned from by your style.
Yeah, I'm going to be jumping in like on Will's notes and sort of rolling off of that. I have like a looser, like, you know, there's less structure in the way I world build than writing down notes in certain aspects. And then I found that once I started with this like cloud of ideas, like a brainstorming sheet, if you will, I then organize it into a structure.
Right.
So it starts like that for me.
So first up is coming up with a premise. This could be coming up with the basic idea of a setting or campaign concept. For me personally, it's almost always a setting concept. But the important thing is to explore this concept and figure out its genre.
And its scale.
Its scale, the vibes, the style of it. Also, the narrative themes that you might want to be explored in this concept.
Yes, and if you're not too familiar with what narrative themes are or should be, they're usually like obvious points like, is love a part of your story, or, you know, heroism, adventure, like what's the core thing you're looking for to display in your storytelling?
Yeah, absolutely. So I have a couple examples here. The number one would be SuperQuest Saga, the setting of Drakenstar. And then that's my most recent campaign that I finished.
And we have recorded it, and it aired on its own special podcast feed and on YouTube. So if you guys want to check that out, it's awesome. I play in it along with your special guest, Jake, and a friend of the show, Josh Freeland.
And then the currently in production Unhallowed, right?
Yes.
So for Drakenstar, the premise was D&D fast forward into the distant future. We're going 100,000 years in the future, and I'm going to come up with how things are developed. It's going to be high magic, high technology. These things are going to be met and intertwined in a way that, like, it would make sense for it to be, because they're not going to just stay separate.
Yes.
There's going to be space politics. There's going to be I want it to be a sweeping space opera.
Yeah. It's what is it? Science fantasy, space fantasy,
science fantasy, space opera, whatever. It's hard to define like any good story, but that's just the best you could probably put.
Yeah, it is very good. You should go check it out. And we're currently writing the setting book for it. We had a successful Kickstarter campaign that dropped, and there's going to be a backer kit in place for people that missed that to get their hands on a copy.
Very soon. We were aiming for the first week of April, but more on that when we know a bit more.
Yeah, maybe that'll be a long rest thing for this episode. Yeah. We can kind of update people on the Kickstarter.
Yeah, that sounds good. Okay. And then finally, dragons in space, and what does that look like?
Right.
This was my...
It looks cool, by the way.
My conception. It does look cool. that was my first thing that I did. Come up with a premise and then work from there.
Yeah.
For Unhallowed, Gothic horror meets D&D was my idea here. I really want some Shadowfell influence going on. And one of the main things was I wanted this to be a thing where we come into the story after the quote-unquote bad guys have already won. Mm-hmm. Like, this is not you guys got to stop the bad guys. No, it's over. This is the end of the world.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the vibe I wanted, and I wanted to build a campaign based off that premise.
Yeah, that's cool. So for mine, I have a couple as well. I've actually tried and failed a couple of times at a podcast version of a campaign setting for me that we called SuperQuest Ultra before SuperQuest Saga. Mm-hmm. And it was good, but I think we just took too much on at once, and like it was a big learning curve. There was some stuff there, but
it would be really cool to revisit that setting, because I think the setting was super cool.
I mean, Omega is sort of that in a way.
Okay.
It's like it literally is like, so I had that failure, right? Mm-hmm. And we learned a lot from it, and we said, okay, let's do SuperQuest Saga instead. It's ready to go, and it worked out. And then SuperQuest Omega is the next thing I'm trying to do, and then the OGL thing happened, and it like, oh, I don't want to do anything Dungeons & Dragons related. I do want to go back to it. Eventually, we will. Mm-hmm. And that is kind of a reimagining of, okay, if I had all the tools that I have now, what would I do this time?
Right.
And so a lot of the themes and concepts that I wanted to use in that campaign are going to transition over.
Okay.
I don't think this is necessarily helpful for people. Like, well, what do I do? Mm-hmm. And sometimes failing the lesson is sometimes failing is the inspiration. Those embers are still in the fire that you're trying to create. That is your creativity. And you can stoke them and make something new. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't be doing the things I was doing without that experience.
Yeah.
But the thing I did next was Flashbang and the Surgeon, which was going on
during Super Quest Saga's recording on Patreon,
yeah.
which is now on a feed. It's being released, and that's going to be a weekly thing I decided now instead of this weird other schedule that we were doing. More about that later. But I was looking at myself as a dungeon master and saying, okay, well, I tried a homebrew campaign, all original stuff with some great people, and it just didn't work out so, as a production thing. I think as a game it was successful.
As a game it was great. Yeah.
it just didn't translate to, like, there were just a lot of missteps, right, and things we had to learn, like I said. But the next one, I was like, okay, I want to do an audio-only thing. I love Batman, the animated series. I love Batman, but specifically the show that inspired me as a kid was the animated series version of the show.
Yeah.
I said, what if I could turn these into, like, these would be really digestible as D&D sessions. It would probably, like, you know, be succinct and listenable, right? Because D&D campaigns can be 5 hours. Like, a session can be 5 hours easy. And there might be a lot of stuff in there that, like, I don't really want to go and cut a lot of stuff out. I don't have the time. I'm working on all these other shows. And it was a really great way for me to, like, okay, how can I D&Dify this but still keep the integrity of a Batman episode in here? And it was just using the script and be like, well, they kind of already did it when they wrote it. They just were like, okay, Batman's going to fail here and here, and so I'll make checks that are high or whatever. The DC here is high. Batman couldn't do it. So, like, it's going to be tough. Sometimes those things worked out. Sometimes they didn't, and we rolled with the punches, and it made for a really fun campaign.
Yeah.
And that was the inspiration of building that world. I took a Forgotten Realms setting that was like Gotham City in Waterdeep. And I was like, that would be a cool place to have a superhero street-level superhero campaign.
Yeah.
Neverwinter is a great spot, too. You could totally same thing in Neverwinter as Metropolis.
Or Baldur's Gate, too.
Baldur's Gate. You just kind of learn enough about the city, look at a map, and then you can kind of overlay that stuff into that world. And be, you know, now we're a rogue and a monk, or a barbarian and a monk slash rogue in this setting are going to be the superheroes instead of, like, whatever the fuck Batman is, which is, like, the biggest multi-class table ever of high-level shit, all at level 20, you know, peak human. But, yeah, we have like, points of failure that are baked into those episodes, and you know, that story arc feels good. And that was a cool way to make a campaign, was to sort of lift off of something else that exists and make it enough my own to have it be something different, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. That kind of feeds into my next step here. My personal one is, after I got my premise, the next thing I do is I put together a set list of quote-unquote inspirational sources, right? Cool. So, like many of us, I have enjoyed a plethora of media in my life. Books, games, movies, shows, etc. Some have had an immense amount of influence on my taste and personal growth. So what I like to do is pick through this mental library of mine and choose 5 to 10 sources that I want to evoke or be reflected in my work. Sometimes in an overt or even humorous way, but mostly in a more subtle way. My goal is to take pieces of these important materials and try and make pieces of my setting make me feel the same way that they do.
I think that's the key thing here is you're using this to build your setting, and you have to try to not impose these things onto your players. The hardest thing is, like, when people are writing books and stuff, and they're making their own characters are going to live in that story, and they're in control of all the pieces.
Right.
You're not in control of all the pieces for D&D. Your heroes are going to, you have to know your heroes and build around them. And they have to live in your setting as their characters. Right. So, you guys are operating in tandem, and so that is important that you wrote it that way to me, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. I find giving myself the set amount of inspirational materials gives what I am working a consistent vibe or flavor. It's like, okay, I have these ingredients, right?
Yeah.
And I'm picking from these ingredients, and I'm trying not to go too far outside of them, and it's giving my dish, if you will, a very particular flavor.
Yes.
So for Dragonstar, this list was the anime Outlaw Star, the anime Tenchimuyo, Guardians of the Galaxy, the Final Fantasy series, Nausicaa of the Valley of the Wind, some Pokemon, Saga the Comic series, Wheel of Time series, Stormlight Archives, and 4th edition D&D.
Cool.
And that was basically it. There's a little bit of Legend Dragoon. That's it.
Yeah, Powerpuff Girls style creates some shit, you know?
Yeah.
Or Professor. Yeah. His name was Professor X, huh?
I think it was Professor X.
That's kind of a weird name.
Is it Professor X? No, Professor Plutonium. That's his name.
Also a weird name.
Yeah, also a weird name, but yeah. Anyways, I love Powerpuff Girls.
Oh, Chemical X.
It was Chemical X. I tried to show my stepdaughter Powerpuff Girls, and she was not.
Powerpuff Girls is the inspiration for the, like, you know, the intro voice I'm doing on FBATS and stuff, or like whenever old timey transatlantic radio guy voice. Mm-hmm. It's mm-hmm. like, well, the Powerpuffs did it right.
Super did.
And that was modern enough for my reference, my frame of reference to do that. FBATS opens up with some, like, you know, on this episode of blah, blah, blah. And I do that voice. It changes so drastically from the early ones to the later ones as it develops.
Yeah. So for Unhallowed,
Okay, real quick. What is Unhallowed for people that don't know?
Unhallowed is a...
I know you kind of said already.
Yeah, but. It's an a gothic horror / dark fantasy tabletop RPG game. We started with 5th edition. We moved over to Pathfinder 2nd edition.
It's not available yet, but it will be soon.
Yeah, it's not available yet. It's going to be a high-level production with full music score, sound effects, voice acting, all this other stuff.
Doing it big.
We're trying to do it big. And it takes place in a world where these three entities called the Unhallowed have, over the course of centuries, conquered most of the known world and... really, the world is being swallowed whole by the Shadowfell and the Plane of Shadow in general. And the heroes, it's a small group of heroes, are being sent by the Order of the Unconquered Sun, which is like the last remnant of powerful religion left in this universe, to try and assassinate these beings because the war itself has just been a terrible war of attrition, and they are just losing more and more ground. Yeah. But anyways, yeah, that it's coming out in the future, but that's the basic of it.
Yeah, we're in the recording phase and some post-production phase, but yeah. And it is a good idea to name your settings. It's cool.
Yeah, it helps. So my set inspirational material list for this setting is Castlevania, both the series, the series game, and the show.
Metroidvania series.
Yeah, the video game series and the show. More the video game series than the show, but the show has its place. Elden Ring, Bloodborne, the Helsing anime, just folklore and mythology, mostly European in this case because of the nature of what I'm writing.
Yeah, like some cryptid stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Vampires, werewolves, stuff like that. And then some stuff from Dennis L. McKiernan's Mythgar series.
Oh, cool. Yeah. What's that movie series? Vampires, werewolves, female protagonist.
True Blood?
No, not True Blood. It's a movie. It's a series of movies.
Oh, Underworld.
Underworld.
Yeah, Underworld. I love Underworld.
Yeah, yeah. I was going to say, I was like, I feel like that should be here. I don't know if it is or not. If
it's not just because that's so modern.
That's true. Maybe it's like more background-y. Yeah. Like, you're right. It's like, they feel like Resident Evil movies, kind of. Like, there's guns and stuff.
Yeah, know? Exactly. Which, I do love those movies, but it's not that much of an influence on what I'm doing, but it might be.
You have a more medieval take on things.
Yeah, yeah. So as I'm doing all of this with my set material list and my concept, I'm usually also doing the big heavy lifting of cooking up the villain or villains, right? So I come up with a concept or a name, and then I build a mythos about the villain in my head. I think of events that would have likely occurred due to this entity or entities, and what plans and machinations it might be laying the groundwork for. This fleshes out the antagonist and setting at the same time. So also, it's important to have compelling villains because a compelling villain interacting with your setting by proxy begins to make your setting that much more compelling.
Yes. I mean, you want somebody interesting. You know, what's going to make people try to stop someone?
Right. Exactly.
And it's the kind of style that we're using here is when we say we're like using these ingredients, those things are going through the Will filter.
Mm-hmm.
They're going through Will's brain and then they're coming out onto paper and it becomes something new.
Yeah.
And that's like the kind of thing that I think is what we're trying to embody here. We're not like saying to plagiarize anything necessarily. Like don't plagiarize stuff, especially if you're doing what we're doing and like making like content for people. We don't want to like steal someone's work, but the media that you ingest is going to like influence you to make.
Definitely.
And like, I want to make something like this. It's still going to be original. We're not saying like, well, this, and maybe we are in some cases saying that I want this specific scene and it's like a lift off of like Tenchi Muyo or whatever, you know, whatever thing you choose, but it still lives within like this construct that is unique to you.
Absolutely.
Okay. I just want to be clear about that too. Cause I'm not, it's a good place to start to be like, well, I love Full Metal Alchemist Brotherhood, and I really want a campaign arc with layers like that.
I mean, but at the same time, if you want to just run a Full Metal Alchemist Brotherhood campaign, you can.
You totally can. Yeah. You can totally do a lift off of that. There's still, that's the other thing, though. It's still going through the U filter. It's not going to be exactly, you know, it's going to be an effort to make it exactly Full Metal Alchemist Brotherhood. You're going to have the player freedom, right?
Yeah, you have the player freedom, but my point is, like, you can just set it in that world with those rules and those cities and whatnot.
Yeah, there's a Last Airbender RPG
exactly.
That we want to run on Super Short Saga. Mm-hmm. I think Jake is looking into that. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I just want to, like, the technique here is, like, not, like...
Yeah, you're right.
A complete lift.
Yeah, exactly, because, yeah, that's not really you writing at that point.
Yeah.
But the villains that I would have been doing this for with Dragonstar would have been the God Emperor as, like, probably the big one.
Mm-hmm.
The Freelancers, Denethor, if you've seen the show, you kind of know what we're talking about. The Nameless One, Yar'Lethotep, all that other stuff.
Yes.
And for Unhallowed, obviously for spoiler reasons, I can only reveal so much, but, you know, the three Unhallowed.
Yes,
so.
the villains that set up the premise.
Exactly.
They all seem really cool. Like, as a player in that campaign, they all seem... really cool and unapproachable right now.
Right, which is how they should seem right now.
There's a lot of mystery, and there are layers being peeled back very slowly that I'm sure we'll get to eventually, know from a, a contentious, like, hero-villain standpoint who each other are.
Right, exactly.
And that's good. That's also compelling. It's like, I don't want to know this person as a person unless, like, you are trying to weave that in. It's like, oh, we want to make it hard.
We'll find out.
Yes, we will. Yeah.
So now at this point, if you're following Will's guide here, you have a setting concept, a general vibe, a theoretically compelling villain, and some events and plans tied to them.
Mm-hmm.
It is time that at this point I start coloring in the world. It's time to come up with all of the major players of this campaign, the major players being the places, gods, powers that be, NPCs, governmental bodies, magic artifacts, MacGuffins, etc.
Mm-hmm.
The important thing is that these are the most important set pieces for this campaign. Conceptualize them. Flesh them out. Give them a backstory. Populate them or give them a personality. Give them an agenda.
Yeah. Like writing mission statements for your NPCs is like a really good exercise. Mm-hmm. Like, what is this guy's main shit? And if you're a villain in a campaign, you have a mission statement. If you're just like a shopkeeper, well, maintaining the status quo for a shopkeeper might be the end all for that NPC, and that's fine because they are a shopkeeper and, like, not part of the main story.
Right, exactly.
They hand you the weapon that you might go stab the next goblin with.
Sure.
And then, like, oh, thank God for Jimmy back in town. Like, I wouldn't have stabbed this goblin to death without his help selling me this sword. And that brings up a bunch of moral questions about arms dealers that we won't talk about here.
It certainly does. So... It's at this point at my table that I find it's time for session zero. Now, my session zeros tend to take place quite a long bit of time before session one. And this is because I'm actually not anywhere done actually writing the setting at this point. But the players all have very important pieces of the puzzle that I need if I want to flesh it out more and before I can really continue.
Yeah, and like we said earlier, knowing your characters and then they will come to know your world, right?
Exactly.
And session zero is a preliminary to all that. Like, here's what you guys can expect. A lot of session zeros, especially the one we did for Omega, also involve, like, and there's a lot of cool resources that Marcos provided me that I think I'll try to list in the notes in here if I remember, of what and this is just stepping out of, like, actually creating a campaign and actually having a safe game.
Mm-hmm.
So you guys are going to set up, like, what your boundaries are as players and stuff. What is okay to do? What is not okay to do? And that might affect the way you're writing your campaign. Listen to your players. If they tell you that there is something that is triggering for them that they do not want to see in your campaign, please listen to them. Like, that is something contingent for me and my table is contingent for having a game we can safely play together.
Right. And like with Unhallowed, like that, the idea of the game is in itself that this is going to be grim, bitter, dark horror. It's going to be brutal.
Right.
And so like it kind of goes the other way too, of like, if you don't want to be part of that because of a lot of different reasons, you might not want to.
Yeah.
Be,
gruesome.
Then
gore,
you don't have to,
you know,
yeah,
things
there's going to be gore. There's going to be, it's going to be ugly.
Dismemberment, things like that. Yeah. Like, okay, there's some things like, hey, you know, as a player, you can say that's fine, but can we be light on the description for it? And that might be all they need, but you know, listen to them and, there's going to be some give and take with your storytelling. It's collaborative.
Mm-hmm.
So when you decide to play Dungeons and Dragons and you're writing a campaign, you have to think about the people that are going to be in the campaign with you,
mm-hmm.
and what that means for everybody, because we're playing a game and it's supposed to be fun and safe. Those things are important. So be sure to include that in your story writing. Session zero is the best opportunity, I think,
to establish what's a fit for who.
Do it with everyone, in front of everyone, mm-hmm. so everybody is on the same page.
Yeah. So the piece that I'm missing at this point is I need the characters and I need their backstories, because using your character backstories and choices, you can use those to fill up your world even mm-hmm. better. So it makes for a great experience for your player and does a ton of the setting building for you. They tend to give you motivations to work with, NPCs and organizations that they are affiliated with, and lore pieces that create implications within the setting.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, for example, Sebastian in SuperQuest Saga, choosing the Iron Legion as his paladin order made me need to flesh out that particular organization, and how they ended up fitting into the setting changed relationships between entire galactic nations.
Right, and what that looks like, and because sometimes, for me, especially hearing about like new campaigns, I heard a bunch of words I don't understand. What the mm-hmm. fuck is SuperQuest Saga? Right. What is the Iron Legion? So Will came up with 9 Aeneanisms for a paladin to essentially could choose from as their organization they work for, like,
yeah,
here,
that
right?
they can swear their oaths to.
So instead of gods in this setting, there are these Aeneanisms, which are just these ideals. The paladins can work like that, right? So he picked one called the Iron Legion that followed one of those Aeneanisms, right?
Mm-hmm,
it's like
particular Dominion,
Dominion. So that's what, you know, because Freeland picked that,
it made that organization and that precept like a very big part of the whole campaign.
Yes, because the player chose it, it became important.
The devil got involved. It was crazy.
Yeah.
Space Satan. Devil.
Space Satan.
Space Satan. Yeah.
Watch out for Space Satan.
It's true. He's scary. Now it's time to draw connections between all the pieces that you have, right? Everything that your players have given you, all the concepts and stuff that you did before. Doing this will further fill the space between these city-states of lore that you've built. Mm. And as the map fills in, the setting starts to somewhat write itself. And what I mean by this is like, okay, so you have all the different nations, you have all the different players, the NPCs,
right.
and when you start talking about, well, like, well, how are they connected? What does this organization think of this? What does this NPC, you know, they're in this space, but so are these people. So how does that work, right? And when you start drawing all the connections, the map starts to just fill in.
Exactly. And the timelines and stuff. Like, okay, so because of my core elements, which are the things that I wanted to be those things and mm-hmm. the things my players chose, and connecting those dots mean because of this, that means this, and because of this, that means this,
right.
and doing as much of that as you can stomach, essentially.
Right, exactly, yeah. And that's exactly what I mean by write itself, because you're right, because A and B equals C, well, then this must mean this, you know?
Yes,
yeah.
And if it leads down a path you don't like, then change the source material.
Yeah, exactly, you tweak as you need.
And you can even take that to your player. Your players choosing something isn't the end all, you're collaborating, so the mm-hmm. DM says, hey, can we have this thing you picked, can we tweak it to be this instead of this? Because it would
be much
cooler
too,
for something I have planned later.
Absolutely.
And that's all you need to say. And then it can be a yes or no. And then if it's a no, be like, okay, well, what can we do? Compromise and work together.
Mm-hmm.
That's the collaborative part, right?
Yeah.
So, and by doing as much of that as you can stomach, what I mean is like do as much of it as makes sense to you.
Yeah, exactly, to you. Because for everybody, that level of fleshed outness, it varies. It could be super scant or just so incredibly detailed. It's like could be shocking to others.
Yeah, I'm improvising a lot at the table, mm-hmm. But I have my core stuff. Like mm-hmm. basically, I have something that can't be shook out.
Right.
Like
right.
by players doing decision making in game. Right.
Right.
Like,
right.
And whatever. Like, but lots. So that's like the roots and the core of the tree. The main branches. That stuff's can't move
mm-hmm.
but the other all these leaves and shit or whatever, like mm-hmm. that can get ripped away, and like the tree can look completely different at the end of the campaign.
Sure.
Essentially,
absolutely,
if we're gonna use an analogy like
that. I like the tree analogy.
So my players have a lot of room to fuck with stuff and fuck around and make decisions and change things, and maybe like change, you know, maybe because of something they do, I'm drawing this new little path on a branch and like it ends yep. somewhere like, oh, well, damn, I guess that means this. So mm-hmm. we're going to have to address that at some point. And that there's a lot of fun in that.
Mm-hmm.
But there are, build your that's one of my tips here is build your campaign so it doesn't get like obliterated by player decision making.
Right. A campaign should be like a, I'm going to keep going with the tree analogy. It should be like a willow tree. It should be able to bend and move and sway in that wind.
Yes.
Don't be an oak tree that just gets snapped in half and falls over.
Yeah. It'll still be a willow tree at the end of it too.
Yes, like, exactly.
It might be all fucked up or whatever, but like, it's still like, we have this core idea here that is going to maintain.
Sure.
Yeah, I see this dotted line here. Does that mean it's time to take
it
a little break?
It means it's time for a short rest.
Short rest time.
Let's do it.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify is great. They're taking businesses of all sizes, cradling them in their arms, to help them grow by giving them the tools they need. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S., and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success at every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/dungeoncast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/dungeoncast now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/dungeoncast.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
We've returned.
Do you have?
We are fucking back.
I never left.
We never do. We sit here in front of the mic. You're the one that leaves.
Yeah, it's true. So
you being the audience.
Yeah. Are we ready to keep going down this bullet list of mine? What do you think?
Yeah, I think so. But before that,
yeah.
Like we said, this is a patron voted topic, and you can get in on that. I mean, we listen to suggestions. Traditionally, we were like, okay, we're gonna do our own thing. We have a lot of topics to cover. Mm-hmm. We're just going to stick to the schedule for a few years. And we did that for a few years. Mm-hmm. And now we want to like branch out and like, okay, what are we missing that we didn't cover already?
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
that was kind of overwhelming at the beginning to get all these suggestions. Like we will get there. We will make an episode on that one day.
It's true.
It's just going to take some time to cover all these topics. So now we're in more of a place. Okay. Well, what do you guys want to hear? And that's totally cool. You can leave a YouTube comment. You can go to Discord. But if you give us money.
Yeah, that's one way to put it.
On patreon.com/dungeoncast, you will have a direct line.
It's true.
That echoes through the abyss into mm-hmm. the sound chamber mm-hmm. and out of the horn that makes my ears bleed. But exactly. I listen to it.
And you'll get that opportunity every single month.
Yep. And we'll write the episode up and we'll mm-hmm. jump in here and fucking make it happen. So indeed. Thank you to everybody that participates on patreon.com/dungeoncast, where you can go be a part. This is at any tier level.
Yeah.
You get to go vote on any money amount of money that you give us. You'll be able to jump in there and see the polls and vote and leave comments and have a say. And I think it's fucking cool. It's been going great.
Yeah, I've been really enjoying it.
We love the stuff you guys come up with. Yeah. Like, they're really fun episodes. So indeed. Thank you guys very much. If anybody is interested in doing that, you know where to go. There's links below and all that stuff. So, yeah, thanks a lot. I think we should jump back into
Let's do it. Our
campaign
all right.
designing techniques.
So it's at this point that you have as much lore, setting, backdrop, and information as you are reasonably going to need.
Mm-hmm. That's a key word.
Yeah. Even if it feels like the world and campaign concept is still only half-baked to you, you have to remember that as a DM or GM, you are the only one who can see the scant tape and flimsy wire barely holding everything together.
Right. You're the only one that can part your kimono.
Exactly. It's the curse of being a game master, in my point of view. Everyone else might see a fully realized setting with deep lore and well-thought-out environments and inhabitants, but you know the truth. You know just how empty and filled with the unknown it all is.
It's true. There is like yeah. that.
That's the way it is.
Like, people that deal with imposter syndrome and stuff like that, those holes are what fuels that, I feel like. You know, like,
I agree.
If they only knew the Swiss cheese that this board is.
Right.
But, like, they're, I love Powered by the Apocalypse concept of leave blanks. It encourages you to do this. Leave blank spaces on the map because you can discuss those things at the table and fill in those blanks.
Sure.
And then it's even more collaborative. I think for us, there's a little more touch and go there with like needing to be ready because of the nature of making a radio show.
It is. Yeah, it's a little different. I think I have a paragraph in there about that.
Yeah, but we're that's different for us. Like,
yeah, that's different for us for that reason.
I have my home game where like I don't give a fuck because of that pressure gone off of making like a production. Mm-hmm. I'm here at my table with just people from like coworkers or, you know, whoever is here. They're all my friends.
Yeah.
And if there's something that comes up and it's like, oh shit, I didn't really have that prepared. Hey guys, I didn't have the spot filled out. What do you guys think it should be? And let's hear.
Oh, that's
let's
cool.
get a round
that's like
table.
A direct way to kind of do
yeah,
it. Yeah,
like how should we address this? And then I'm good at improv. I can take that piece right as we come up with it and be like, okay, because of that, let me just draw out this. You know,
yeah,
now
sure,
because of that,
sure.
this.
Yeah,
and that's how I'm moving forward with it. And I think in a tabletop space, that should be a comfortable thing for everybody to do.
Yeah absolutely. I mean, I could see like a table not wanting to do that because that's not really their style.
Yeah,
but
like
I think
immersion
it's
might
really
be
cool
part of it, right?
Yeah, immersion like, might be exactly
it,
but
it's a player choice. Like,
it
it's
is
a, your choice as a dungeon master to include or not include that type of
yeah
thing.
Like for me, I'd be like, oh, that's cool, like that's no problem for me, but I could definitely see like some people wanting a little more immersion. So yeah, that empty space, that unknownness that you know as a dungeon master is there. You need to remember, like, that is not a flaw in your setting.
Exactly.
It's not a flaw in your storytelling ability. Exactly. It's not a flaw in your imagination. This is a feature, and it is a good one. You are not writing a book, and you are not writing a movie script. The main characters of this story are not under your control. They can and will do very unexpected things, and they will do it all the time. So having this empty, unfilled space is very useful because it keeps your setting flexible enough to bend and twist to accommodate the never-ending unexpected occurrences you should definitely come to expect in your campaign.
Right. That thing we were talking about, like, hey, bring it up to your – what do you guys think it should be? Mm. That can be something you do real quick on the side.
It can, yeah.
All right, guys, now it's time for me to go get a Coca-Cola from the refrigerator. Everybody hang tight. And then – or you go to the bathroom or whatever.
You're just like,
and
oh, shit, what do I do?
All right, here's what we're going to – I'm going to – because of that, this and that. And then, you know, it's okay. It'll be like, I need a break. Or be open about that. I need a break so I can like figure that out real quick. Hang on a second. Yeah. You guys talk amongst yourselves. Role play.
And then, right.
You know, go do what you need to do.
So true. Very true. So also, I see the unknownness of it all to be creatively refreshing. You may have an idea of how things will basically go, theoretically, in your campaign, but you do not know the details, the nuances, and the twists of what is to come. And that will keep things exciting and compelling for you as a DM.
Yeah, and the...
You're supposed to be having fun, too.
Yeah, and there's this... I don't know how people feel about it these days, but basically putting a campaign on rails, like, you know, that means that they can't, you know, rip the branches off the tree or whatever the analogy we were doing earlier. Like, no matter what decisions they make, this will, this event, the events as you have laid them out will still happen.
Right. Absolutely.
Which can be good, can be bad. Like, it's more on the movie script sort of idea of things. And you could lead
well,
that way.
Just to, like, no matter what, some of what you're doing, unless you're doing a 100% improv game, is going to be set in stone, right?
Yeah.
Like, because, like, the players in the end are just singular people in a much greater world than themselves, right? And so, like, I feel like there's a social contract between the players and the Dungeon Master of, like, you know, yeah, of course you have autonomy and of course you could do whatever your character would do. But also, like, remember that the DM has to prepare these things and try not to literally break everything. Like, don't go out of your way to do it. You know
what
I mean?
Yeah. Like, we walked up on a carnival one time with like these 10 different games that we had options to go explore, like a roller coaster that went through a mine, a really creepy, what do you call them?
A merry-go-round.
Carousel.
Yeah.
Merry-go-round. Yeah. Yeah. Both, yeah. You know, things like that. And we could have just been like, fuck it. We don't go there at all. And
yeah, it's like, well, great, guys. I just spent hours preparing this awesome place.
Like, yeah, and it's like, well, you're in the middle of a desert, and that's, like, sort of the trick of this place. And
right.
It's like, yeah, we walk into that shit, and like, well, fuck you guys, too, you know? Like, all right.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
It's like, so,
exactly.
You know, yeah, I like the player, the unwritten, well, I mean, like, we showed up. We shouldn't, like, fuck with you on purpose and, like, ruin
right.
the night.
Exactly, exactly right. So now it's time to come up with the major plot points of your campaign's story. Start with the most unchangeable things and events, and also the things and events that are, the very least, very likely to happen, and put them in chronological order. This is like the outline or the scaffolding of your storyline. Remember that this is a living document and will need further adjusting as the campaign keeps going.
Yeah, okay, so I think now is a good time for me to talk about Super Quest Omega and my style for writing that campaign.
Okay.
Is I'm putting a lot of work right now, and I worked backwards. I had an ending scene that I thought of. It was very inspiring for, like, oh, how do I get to that? And that's how I worked. I worked backwards. I said, okay, well, they could go through this sort of like thing, and it can be feel really open world and stuff too. And then, you know, it came to start doing the project, and I was like, well, I didn't put enough effort into the very beginning. It's very important. And so then I started like working on that last, and it got a little stressful. I was like, okay, well, I need to figure out this is the biggest place so far. And like, I worked backwards to it and didn't have a lot of time to work on it before we were going to start playing. So I was like doing a lot of sketch work on the side, a lot of this basic outline work. Like, I used a lot of techniques for like essay writing too, like the brainstorming and then organizing the brainstorming trees into like a solid outline. And, you know, okay, here are the people, here are the places, here are their ideas, here are the things. And like, building a puzzle of what this place looked like with like all these jigsaw pieces that I was cutting out and making, you know, and stacking on top of each other. Like, okay, here's like the diving board. Like, it had to be structurally sound.
Right.
And, like,
absolutely.
Once they dive off of it, now I have all this other stuff. And like,
right.
The idea is I don't know what's going to happen between the diving board and that scene at the end, point
exactly.
A and point B.
Yeah.
But there are lots of ways to get from A to B. Mm-hmm. It's not always a direct path, right?
Exactly,
so,
yeah.
All my room for improv is in that space between and moving left
between
or right.
Between the diving board and the other side of that pool.
Yeah, so here's a bunch of locations in between, and like, let's try to figure it out. And that is the structure I use to move forward with it.
Yeah,
it's not too different from on here, but it was mentally for me a unique and different approach to any other way that I've done it, because it all like, oh, well, I want this thing. So like, I was just trying to logically think my way through what the next process would be. And that means I'm drawing on like, well, how would I, you know, structure this, you know, reverse engineering it sort of before it was even made.
Right.
It's kind of like,
It's
so
different.
Yeah. It resulted in a process similar to the one that we were talking about here in Hole, but it felt very different.
Right.
It felt
right.
like I was like sifting through the sand and finding the pieces.
Right,
like,
which is that's cool. Discovery writing is very cool. So next up, I recommend dividing your story into multiple arcs, whether you do this in like an official capacity like Supergirl Saga or just more like you're the one keeping track of where arcs begin and end.
Mm-hmm.
And only doing the detailed plotting out at most one arc in advance, because like your players are just going to do so much that you won't be able to account for, that like trying to plot out further than that is just an exercise of futility in my point of view.
Right.
And speaking of arcs, the first arc of the campaign, I feel, is a great time to try and put together a microcosm of the setting itself. So like a succinct but thorough intro to the setting.
Mm-hmm.
Try and work in the most fundamental elements of the campaign into this arc in some sort of capacity if you can. Obviously, don't overdo it or overstuff it, but do your best.
A lot of RPG video games do a great job of this, too.
Yeah, absolutely. So, example for Supergirl Saga is the first arc introduced spaceflight and aether reactors, the main antagonist factions of the Imperial Elves and the Illithan Empire, the concept of bracer jacks, the precepts of Aeneanism, the galactic spirit, the historical importance of the Prime Event, Primina's inner power, influence of the Great Old Ones, and a particular blend of high technology and high magic. And that's all in the first arc. So it's like,
yes,
this is a mini microcosm of what this is all going to be about. We all got it kind of in here.
Right. Our medieval fantasy characters get rocketed into this, and they're getting this basically a tutorial of the setting in like a, why don't the fuck you guys fucking know this sort
right,
of like
exactly.
flavor on it. Yeah. And it's, you know, and then you find out from even from the player aspect, it's like, well, I need to learn all this language, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, because what is ether? Or what is a bracer jack?
Yeah,
and like,
yeah.
oh, it's gas. Oh, it's a cell phone. Like, okay.
Right, right.
Like,
it's true.
It's obviously not, that's very reductive.
Sure, but it's the
but
point
it,
stands.
That's how I like, okay, if I relate it to like, this is a type of fuel. Mm-hmm. Like, you know.
And that's in a lot of ways what it is, right. although it's a lot more.
Exactly. Yeah. And my bracer jack is like, this is how I communicate with people. Mm-hmm. This is how I like
it's
access
like
the greater web. And
super,
like,
super mega smartphone.
Yeah, I can kind of use it physically to get into like, you know, R2-D2 style, like jack into stuff and you know, things like that.
Exactly. So lastly, I just have a few general tips for as your campaign continues and develops. First is try and integrate environmental storytelling pretty much everywhere if you can. Think about the designs of things, the architecture, the materials being used and present, the logistics of communities and the effects of their environments. By taking these things into consideration as you present new places to your party, the hidden story of your story gets told without you needing to do the telling of it.
Mm-hmm.
It will make your world feel that much more real to players, even if they don't consciously notice or ask about any of these things.
Right. Like, it's a very subtle art.
Exactly.
Legend of Zelda does, especially Ocarina of Time, does an amazing job.
Yes, that's a really good example. I've become really inspired by all the FromSoft games, so Dark Souls and all that other stuff.
Mm.
That's like the only storytelling that those stories do.
Yeah, like, it's just the environment. Like, oh, here's a fucking like burned down house.
Right, exactly. Like,
you know, that's your clue for what's going on here. Mm-hmm. And then the fire demon shows. You know, like that's, I don't know what happens.
I mean, that's a really like basic thing, but like, yeah, there's that. But like with FromSoft games, there's just almost no actual narrative. You have to piece it together by reading the lore on items or just looking at your environment and kind of like deductively figuring out like, oh shit, this means this because this means that. And
Hollow Knight does a good job of like kind of blending the two together where they are giving you some lore bits, but they're like really obscure at the beginning. You're like,
right,
who is talking to me in this fucking rock? Like, and they're just like, we are of the divine and these are our lands, and like, be careful. I was like,
it's like, all right.
And like, okay, there's like, and it's like the same color as my energy stuff, which is called soul. So is this some sort of soul talking to me, and who is it and why? And then later on, I find this room I'm not allowed in. There's a rock outside, and it's like, I don't know if you want to go in there and see what's up, but we recommend you don't. And obviously you do. Uh-huh. So like, you're going to want to go in there eventually, but like, it takes some time, you know. It's just stuff like that.
Right.
And, like, they're giving, you can see the wreckage of the world around you. Mm-hmm. And like, why are these species, like, why is there only one of this guy? And like, here's a bunch of corpses or whatever, you know,
right.
stuff like that.
Yeah, exactly.
Ruins and wreckage and all that shit.
So I will admit, that this concept of the environmental storytelling, this is more effective for campaigns that are being recorded, which ours usually are.
Right.
Environmental storytelling is often far more appreciated by the listening or watching audience than the players themselves, who are too in it to like see all that because they're doing this or they're not.
It was hard for me in Saga. Like, yeah, my brain wasn't like listening for those things. I was listening for like I need to be on my mechanics and
exactly
play the game.
And part of that is because we know it's being recorded, so that plays its part there. But what's cool is the reason it's more effective or the payoff's higher is because they're recorded, people can go back and you and me can go back and listen multiple times.
Yeah.
And now I don't pick have to worry up about on any all those things. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
And it is really rewarding. Like, I really appreciate players like Jake who are going to be
Jake's great.
Taking notes as they go. Like, okay, I don't need to worry about it if I just jot down a quick note that I can reference real quick. My brain can continue to focus on the mechanical side of things, but as I continued into the campaign, I kept trying new things and having to learn as I go. Like, okay, now I'm gonna try. I tried the warlock. Now I'm gonna try, and this is light spoilers for Saga, but now I'm gonna try the wizard, and I want to try the rogue, and I'm gonna do a bunch of stuff and like try to make this build work because I want to bring mechanical interest to that too and that side. But that's all just like you. If you're not recording your games, you don't really got to worry about that stuff.
You don't.
My real recommendation is take notes as a player, because some things can enrich the experience.
Also, I guess one thing I'll add to the whole recording thing is like we're doing this for shows and all that other stuff. But
for fucking internet clout.
Yeah. If if you don't you don't have to have a channel or anything to record your sessions to get something out of it, because recording your sessions and then going back years later to reminisce on it or to re-experience it, like that in itself can be worth it just to record. So
yeah, and as an audio guy, like if you guys want something that is going to be decent quality and not break the bank too hard, the Zoom H6 is like a really nice piece of equipment. We have that as a backup. Actually, Jake has it. I need to get that shit from him. but you can put a microphone on the top of that thing. It has like a plug-in for plugins for individual mics, but it also has a plate like a you can record
like
with
a room
it
mic?
As a mic for a room. Yeah, a lot of Foley artists use it in the field for like making sound effects and stuff,
right?
With that one, a mic attachment, you could just set that in the middle of the table and let it be what it is.
Yeah, again, if you're not too worried about its quality, then that's perfectly fine.
Yeah, you should be able to hear everybody just fine. Do a test on it, record something, play it on your computer, record a conversation with everyone sitting where they're going to be sitting, and it's not going to be the best sounding thing. It's just simply
but it will be good. It'll work.
It'll be listenable.
And exactly.
All you'll need. And you're right. It is. We've talked about that in my home games. Like, we should be recording this. That shit was so funny. I was I would if I wasn't fucking recording like eight other fucking
things. I know.
Things,
yeah, exactly. Yeah. This is, it is a job.
Yeah.
All right. So next up is a little bit kind of more on the environmental storytelling in a way. I believe that inference over direct information can be 10 times more useful to you as a DM a lot of the time. By letting the players try and piece some of the details of what is going on out, you give them an unknowing way of collaborating with your story. Mm-hmm. So you may have a particular idea, but because you kept some aspects of others' motivations and past events unknown, your players might actually draw a much cooler, better conclusion than you did.
Yep.
Time to swap out your original plan, because what they did was came up with was way better.
I see way too many memes about that, actually.
Yeah. I mean,
it's really funny.
That's DMing 101, and it's a good thing.
It's a good thing. Literally, it's like, oh, that sounds fucking cool.
Yeah.
Guess it is that now.
Exactly.
Good job also for figuring it. Way to figure it out, winky wink. So you can tell them later,
it's all over.
Hey, this wouldn't have happened if you didn't do blah, blah, blah. And that's a cool thing as a separate notes page to keep as a DM. Things your players did, because those were a lot of the questions that you got for our Super Talk Saga, which is like a recap show where we like let the audience ask questions and stuff. It was like, well, what did the players do that like broke your shit open, changed things? Mm-hmm. And, you have to recall that.
Yeah, you do. You do.
So that's cool. Like, quick note, like because this happens now, that's a neat little thing that you could do as a DM.
Yeah, agreed. Also, I think things being mysterious or unknown in and of itself has a compelling aspect that a lot of players buy into. Like, because there's mystery, because things aren't just told to them, they find it more interesting because they want to know what the hell's going on.
Mm, yeah.
And then lastly, and probably the absolute most importantly, is remember to collaborate and to communicate with your players, especially about their character arcs and their big character moments. You know, you want them to have their big moments. They want to have their big moments. When some stuff comes up, it might be good to have some conversations about it beforehand, you know?
Yeah, you don't just have to have a session zero and call it. Yeah. Like, the idea of session zero continues through. If something,
yes.
Things change. If something changes story-wise, or if somebody's, hey, it turns out I'm not comfortable with this thing that we were going to do, you know?
Right.
Yeah,
I did not chop off Sebastian Crenshaw's arm without talking to Josh Freeland first.
Right.
There's a lot of the interlude stuff in Super
Jake, Press. Jake and I didn't know that though.
Yeah,
like,
you
hey,
guys.
Yo, what the fuck?
That shit was hilarious. Yeah. There was a lot of Galactic Spirit stuff with Percy that me and him had like long, big conversations about mm-hmm. before we like finalized what we wanted to happen in those moments.
Right. Yeah.
So that level of collaboration, communication outside of the game is important. So don't shy away from doing it if you feel you need to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's definitely good advice for sure.
So that's how I go about my business when it comes to designing a campaign. I don't know if there's anything else you wanted to add.
Yeah, we had a couple of ideas, right, with different campaigns that so like FBATS is a very niche style of running games. Mm-hmm. It's very podcasty.
Yeah.
Super Quest Saga, that show is written to be a certain length of time each recording session.
Right, that's true.
You know, you've got your plot points and we're operating within them. And mm-hmm. yeah, there. Once we start a mission, like we're going to do the mission and mm-hmm. like whatever's going to happen is going to happen on the way. And that is railroady. And I think it's totally a legitimate and fun way to play the game.
I also think like with Super Quest Saga in particular, like there's just such a level of urgency all the time.
Right.
That's yes. like you guys didn't have time to be distracted because it's like you got three galactic nations hunting you down and the end of the universe on the other side of things. It's
yeah.
Like,
you're funneled into it.
Yeah. And you get funneled in. Yeah.
That is totally fine. Mm-hmm. And I don't understand a lot of like player sects that get upset with that. Sort of
it just
style
depends.
Of play.
Well, I'll
like,
tell you
we
what.
We knew what to expect
without,
going in, though.
Without interludes, that type of play is exhausting and in a way not cool.
Well, it wasn't.
But,
yeah,
but
exactly.
But with the interludes in between, like the quote unquote, what you would call missions.
Right.
Like it gives you 100% freedom to do whatever you want during that time. You
and
know?
That's exactly what you need, right?
Yeah.
So before we accept a mission, it's wide open. But yeah. as soon as we accept a mission and go do it, okay, that's the mission now. It's a lot like a video game where you're like making a choice on a mm-hmm. mission, and it's not like you can leave the mission until yeah. it's done. Like,
well, I mean, it's just like real life when you take a mission, it's like it'd be weird if you just decided to stop mid-mission and go do other things and then come back.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly. You go into yeah. a more classic example, right? I go into a dungeon. Uh-huh. The dungeon is built before I go in. Like, it's not mm-hmm. like I can go change the way the walls are arranged and shit. Mm-hmm. Like, you're going to have to deal with what's in there.
Yeah,
and,
exactly.
Like, sometimes you're not going to have the freedom of choice to manipulate and change the environment because you're in a fucking dungeon.
There's, yeah, exactly.
There's a dragon in there at the end. Like, what the fuck are you going to do about it? Go in and fight it. Exactly.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Well, there's four paths in the dungeon. Right. And maybe that's your freedom of choice.
Right.
It's like,
right.
okay, I can go down one of these paths. But sometimes there's one fucking hallway and mm-hmm. you got to go do the puzzles that are in the way. And that's the game. And that's fine. It's mm-hmm. just a lot of people get upset about that. And I'm like, well, you've never DM'd, clearly.
Right, like, yeah, that's probably part of it, but yeah, no, I agree with you 100%.
Yeah, I would. So there's the style that I'm playing in my home game right now is like, I just sort of like throw a situation down.
Mm-hmm.
I love the improv aspect of D&D. So
yeah,
I wrote some stuff and I have some cool NPCs. I'm like, ooh, it'd be cool if these guys show up and blah blah blah. So all that's gonna happen. And I lay it out on the table and I say, let's fucking see where this goes. Let's see what happens.
Yeah, yeah.
And so the end of games is my opportunity to ingest what happened and write what's going to happen next. So the next session seems like it's got some groundwork.
Exactly. You need that. That way it's all connected.
Yeah. So the session's time ends when I'm like, okay, I need to figure out what happens next. Mm-hmm. And I let it go. I said, okay, I let it go to it's like, you know, the conclusion we came up with at the table. It's been 4 hours. You know, I'm running out of beer. Let's call it.
right.
That was good. Let's call it. It felt like a natural place to end it. And then I have time. I have 2 weeks or whatever it is to fucking figure out what I'm going to do next. Mm-hmm. And then I do the same exact thing. Okay, now because of all this, it would be cool if this happened. So I lay all that out on the table at the beginning of the session, the first hour or so. I put all my pieces down, or I try to. Mm-hmm. And then sometimes I'll be like, okay, if they get to here, I'll throw this shit in.
Okay, yeah.
And then so everything in between is like, well, what the fuck is going to happen next? So I was like, yeah, it'd be cool. Like, where does this path I put them on lead? Probably a forest. Okay, then the road's going to turn and these carts are going to go off the ox that are pulling these carts are like worked up and they can't make this turn because of the intensity of the chase.
Oh, okay.
And it's like,
Well,
one of them's going into the fucking woods. Oh, shit, where do the woods go? More woods. Feywild? Feywild. There's an ox in the Feywild eventually if it doesn't stop. And then, you know.
So it's almost procedurally generated.
Yeah, as you're exactly. Going. Yeah, but
that's cool. That's awesome.
It's railroaded, but I'm laying down the tracks as we're playing going, like a fucking Looney Tune. Mm-hmm, and, you know, somebody went and got that ox before it went too far. Fine. Guess we'll get to the Feywild whenever it's still over there.
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
Also, there's this path. I got to figure out where that goes. That's where I'm literally at right now. Like, I got to figure out what's in that direction because some thing of interest happened that way and what happened that way. And I know that eventually there's a town up here.
Mm-hmm,
you know, whatever. Whatever happens in between is. It's all. We're having fun so far.
Sounds like a good time.
Yeah, and I don't have to do a lot of work for it, which is great. I can focus on other things and just show up and play that game. And be like, oh, okay, well, I know what stories are and how to, like, get through
how to
one.
Tell them, yeah.
Yeah, so we just do that. That's literally my improv game. This a game I play with my coworkers where they can fucking be, like, weird dudes and, like, do whatever the hell they want.
Gotcha,
you know?
Okay.
And
that's cool.
Some of the best sessions we've had are just, like, I make up a bar. I make up a tavern, and they just hang out in there for, like, literally 3 hours.
Oh, my goodness.
We just role play in the tavern.
That's hilarious.
There's been goats that do drugs. There's been a lot of drinking contests. The piano man gets a silver to play this fucking song. So I'll literally have, a playlist that we're going off. Like, not a playlist. Like, I could make a playlist with the song suggestions. Like, piano man ends, and then one of my players is like, hey, can we play Freebird next? It's like the piano version of Freebird starts to play after you pay this guy silver. And I get out my phone and play Freebird.
Okay,
Freebird's over. Does anybody have a song choice? And like that's literally what we do all night long.
Oh,
and those have been some of the most fun sessions. Like somebody pissed themselves. Like it's literally like a crazy Will Ferrell movie style. Like,
yeah, that's I'm definitely getting that vibe for sure. Yeah. But sounds like fun.
And, you know, this guy homebrewed a Fearbolg to be a moose person. His name is Mustafa Robin. I don't know why, but like that's his vibe right now, and like that's the kind of shit he's getting up to is like moose-based.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, that's just fun stuff like that. Like that's that cool. Game, we don't care. Like it's all loose.
It's all
and,
fun
like,
and games. It's just yeah.
But
yeah.
It also has this very serious fantasy vibe because I'm putting them in dire straits all the time. You know?
Okay, well yeah, there's the danger aspect.
We get to the bar, but then mission starts. And it's like okay, well like you're at this bar, getting a free ride tonight with a free room because the military wants to test you tomorrow and like join up. And that's like their pyramid scheme way of getting you to come hang out.
Right.
It's like, well, you can come stay the night here for free and eat and drink for free, but you're going to do a test in the morning. Mm-hmm. And then we're going to like consign you basically if with your permission, of course.
Right.
You know, sort of thing. But also here's some gold. You know?
Okay,
like, oh, fuck gold.
That's
and, like,
very interesting.
Clout, you know, like I'm going to go be an adventurer and like, oh, yeah. This special group of people that showed up at the bar together and happened to hang out the night before because they're all the PCs, right, are going to do this mission together. We've selected you to be a niche group that goes out and does a special thing. And
okay.
That's the mission, and that's the campaign. And it's all just, like, literally just laying down the tracks.
It sounds almost like it's episodic.
It is. Yeah. You know, and a lot of my experience DMing has been on camera and stuff. So, like, but it feels... You know, what are you doing when you're writing a show like Batman? It's episodic. It has it has a first, second, and third act.
Right.
And, like, that's a cool way to write sessions.
Yeah,
or
that's
like
different for sure. That's cool.
I want a more novel feel with chapters and story arcs. Like, okay, they they went into Dwarf Town and beat the fucking stupid dragon that was eating all their gold. And now, okay. now they're done in Dwarfland. Now okay. it's Elfland time.
Sure.
And like,
sure,
okay,
sure, sure.
now they're going to go hang out with these fucking weed smoking druid elves or whatever. And fucking.
Your stereotypes are riveting.
Yeah. See, like, but that's the kind of thing you could do.
Sure.
You
know? Yeah, absolutely.
And
absolutely.
D&D is full of like stereotypes that they created for their
sure,
own.
Sure. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. And yeah. you can or don't use them or however you want. Yeah.
That was something like for pieces to play with in your campaign.
Yeah.
That's what's cool about this show. And doing D&D lore is like, look at this new piece you can play
that you
with.
Could use if you want. Yeah,
like,
exactly.
Like
that's
a Demigorgon
the idea.
In your campaign as your final bad guy, like, mm-hmm. what a dream, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, okay, mm-hmm. cool. Like, or you know, Bahamut is mm-hmm. gonna show up at the end and fucking save the day,
right? Right.
And
right.
you wouldn't have been able to do it if you didn't break the fucking seal on the evil magic, blah blah blah, that mm-hmm. you know, destroyed the Vorpal sword that was like locked in the wall, like that sort of thing.
Exactly.
Like,
yeah.
Like if you are looking for inspiration. For, you know, you can't come up with the you have to come up with the story, but the pieces that we can provide
you
with here,
the tools, if you will,
can give you the inspiration to get from A to B.
Yeah,
I think
I agree.
That has also been an Omega thing. It's like using the pieces from D&D, which is why it was hard to like. This is it was made for D&D.
Right.
Like it
used
a bunch of D&D stuff, and it was born from D&D, and we like that game, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, okay, well. Converting it to another system is just something I'm not interested in anymore.
That totally understandable.
Yeah, it's like hard to come to that realization knowing in the face of like what's going on. But those are the things that are like those are our problems as content creators, right? And
yeah.
I'm really concerned. Like
agreed.
You yeah. these aren't the types of things that the general people that play D&D are gonna have to deal with.
Right. No, they're not.
So have fun with your D&D campaign, your Pathfinder campaign, whatever it is. A lot of these things apply to all that stuff.
Yeah, what I wrote was system agnostic. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's just, absolutely.
Yeah, so hopefully you guys find something useful in all the things that we had to say. Let us know in the comments. And also let us know about things that you do or techniques that you have that maybe we didn't touch on today. And let us know in the comments, you know, what we could learn.
Those things can also help the next person going into the comment section to read. So
exactly. Yeah, that too.
Adding your piece to this puzzle of like a utility piece of here's what I do. Mm-hmm. It's super useful and it's a very community driven thing. So thanks a lot for leaving that comment if you choose to do so.
Indeed. And with that being said, it's time for a long rest.
Long rest. Hey, everybody, welcome to the Long Rest. This is our patron Long Rest, a very special campfire we've set up. It's actually a bonfire.
Absolutely, it's a bonfire.
It's a big party.
A roaring bonfire.
This is pre-Long Rest party,
okay.
where we drink mead and be merry with our patrons.
Indeed.
Thank you guys for enabling us. and great job on picking the topics. That was a fun episode to record, and I'm looking forward to what you guys have in the future. There are more polls. I think we're gonna start doing a poll about Super Short Saga. Maybe
we'll do a periodic one to
in April. Probably we'll do one because people want to suggest stuff for that as well.
Yeah,
and then we can see what's possible and
that
what
sounds
we can do.
That sounds cool. I already know what the next topic is. So you want me to tell you?
For
the next patron voted thing. It's overwhelming. The vote was overwhelming.
Oh, yeah. We can announce that. Yeah. I mean, this is for Super Short Saga specifically. People
want to poll on that
as well to decide what mini campaign we play next.
Yeah, that sounds good.
Or what system we use, I guess.
Yeah, sure.
Which we've got a bunch of stuff lined up. So if y'all pick one of those and we've already got it ready to go, if you pick something new, we'll have to take some time to make it, right?
Right.
And, like, learn it. But, yeah, exactly. You know, that's something for – look out for that in April. I've talked to Will about it. Mm-hmm. But yeah, what's the next patron?
Cosmic horror in tabletop RPGs.
Ooh.
It was an overwhelming vote. Like, the other three topics did not compete.
I would say we do really, according to our metrics, we do really well at talking about cosmic horror.
Yeah,
people
so
like to listen to us
I guess we will
that.
Do it again.
I mean, it's
just fine with me.
It's one of my large backgrounds in fantasy reading, is cosmic horror.
Indeed.
Okay, so let's get into some patron shout-outs. It's been a long time coming. Thank you guys for being so patient. I don't think we're going to hit every single person on this one. So the people that have upgraded, I think we're going to get you next episode or maybe even the next patron episode again. We got to figure it out. There's a couple of details missing. It's my fault. I'm sorry. Okay. So let's do this. Let's do this fucking thing.
Let's do it.
I'm gathering my patron energy. Oh shit. There's so much of it. That didn't take very long. Khalil Stanley.
What was it?
It's
Khalil.
I think it's Khalil. It's
thank you, Khalil.
K A H L I L.
Okay.
Khalil. Yeah. Thank you. Linus Hogg.
Thank you, Linus.
Thank you, Linus. Upgrading to. Oh God, I don't know what. I'm just gonna air horns you. Seems like an air horns thing. We've included like the denomination type here, mm-hmm. but like I don't know what the conversion is.
Right.
Like without.
It's impossible to know.
Google. Well, Google's Google. The only one that will know. In this room.
The almighty Google.
The almighty Goog. El Goog. You know you can type in El Goog and it brings up the front page of Google, but Google is backwards.
I did not know that.
That's fucking funny.
Interesting.
Google has all kinds of weird little niche things like that. Clay Lom.
Thank you, Clay.
Sax.
Thank you, Sax.
An annual subscriber.
Annual subscriber.
Hi, The Last Mile.
Hey, it's The Last Mile. Thank you, Last Mile.
They downgraded, but that doesn't hurt my feelings. All good. You're all over the place, man.
It's we love all you. Good.
Yeah. We know your history here. J-Frog.
Thank you, J-Frog.
Thank you, J-Frog. I love the way you spelled frog. It's F-R-A-W-G-G. One of my, actually, now that it's aired publicly, Frog is one of my favorite early NPCs in FBATS. It's a mute kid. Mm-hmm. Faye Moser, an annual subscriber, Faye Moser.
Annual subscriber. Thank you, Faye.
Thank you. Max Berg.
Thank you, Max Berg.
Annual subscriber, Max Berg.
Annual subscriber.
Yeah, they're from Europe somewhere.
Okay.
I know that. I know what the euro looks like.
Yes.
At least I think I do.
Well, if you think it is, it probably is.
Uh-oh. David.
Thank you, David.
Woo!
Woo!
That's one of my faves. Lewis.
Thank you, Lewis.
Thank you, Lewis. We have Trevor C. Mills.
Thank you, Trevor.
Thank you, Trevor. Anthony Cardinale.
Thank you, Anthony.
Thank you, Anthony. And then Anthony Cardinale. Holy shit.
Thank you, Anthony. By the way, Anthony is a returning subscriber. I believe we actually named a spaceship in Supergirl Saga after
him. I remember. Him. Yes.
Back when we were doing that.
Yes.
That back a long time ago.
Back when we were doing that. They returned, and then they returned even harder.
Thank you, Anthony. Thank you.
Shouted them out twice. Thanks, Anthony. Zach J.
Thank you, Zach.
Thank you, Zach J. Brian Wadley.
Thank you, Brian.
They've subscribed to the tier Omega.
Ooh.
Welcome. You've got mail. No, you don't. Well, you might. It wasn't for me, though. Emily Moore.
Thank you, Emily.
Or I guess it should just be pronounced Moore.
I'm pretty sure it's just pronounced Moore.
M-O-O-R-E.
Yeah, Moore.
Moore. Just Moore here. Annual subscriber, Emily Moore. Thank you.
Annual subscriber.
Noen Shoemaker.
Thank you, Noen.
Thanks, Noen. Noah Shoemaker. Did I say Noen?
You did.
What the hell? That H does kind of look like an N if you shave the top off a little bit.
I think that's all H's.
Yeah, it's all
H's. Thank you, Noah.
Only lowercase H's will.
That's true.
Not all H's.
You're right. You're absolutely right.
Thanks, Noah. Have you seen Good Boy Noah on TikTok?
No.
Slash Reels?
I don't have TikTok.
He's like, hey, yo, cheetah. And then he's got a hand puppet.
No.
It's a cheetah, and he's like, what's up? And then they like do a food thing, and he makes a song about it. I'll show you one. It's fucking
okay,
awesome.
Cool.
That's what Noah reminds me of. Good boy, Noah. Okay, I'm switching to this other apparatus to read more patron shoutouts. In the tier Omega, Alejandro M. Ramos.
Thank you, Alejandro.
Thank you. Welcome to the tier Omega. I hope you're enjoying Goblin Punks, the only thing up there for Super Short Saga right now. There's some Omega stuff that's probably gonna stay relevant, I'm hoping, up there. I owe more Omega stuff that I have that I could put up there, so I'll try to get to that. Thank you, Hitch.
Thank you, Hitch.
Hitch. Also for the tier Omega, Alex Martinez.
Thank you, Alex.
Thank you, and welcome to the tier Omega. I hope you're enjoying Goblin Punks. Please listen to it. Hey, also, if you guys do listen to something that we put up on Patreon, like bonus content, leave like a comment or something. Let me know that you listen, at least, or hit the like or whatever the system is on there. We are so dry for feedback on that stuff. I just want to know if you guys like it.
Indeed. Cool.
Tell me I'm pretty. Hey, it's Franz Weinkern.
Thank you, Franz.
Thank you, Franz. You have to say France.
France?
France.
France.
You got to hit the end light.
Franz?
Yeah, it's got a Z at the end, so okay. France.
Thank you, Franz.
Thank you, Franz. We also have I think this is an annual subscriber. I'm going to assume it's an annual subscriber. Annual subscriber, Ice Q.
Thank you, Ice Q. Annual subscriber.
We have Joseph Olberding.
Thank you, Joseph.
Woo.
Woo.
We have ST.
Thank you, ST.
Woo.
Woo.
ST, hi. We've been reading your YouTube comments for a long time. Thanks for coming on board. Appreciate you. Let's see here. We have JShell213.
Thank you, JShell. JShell or J? JShell or JShell?
And then it's their email address.
Thank you, JShell.
I'm not going to say where.
Yeah.
Damn it. Okay. thank you, JShell. Woo!
Woo!
And we've got Patrick Shoop.
Thank you, Patrick.
Shoop. And then we have Caroline D. Welcome to the Tier Omega.
Thank you, Caroline.
Ah, man. Yeah, I think Welcome to the Tier Omega is cool.
Yeah.
It sounds cool.
Yeah, I think
The Tier Omega is in between the entry $5 tier and the next one up used to be the $10 tier. I wanted to make a tier like special for that stuff because the plan was to have its own Patreon one day, like its own separate Super Quest entity out there. Because a lot more people work on those projects. So like
me and Brian, yeah.
But we figured something else out. So I think we're just keeping this tier for now. And that's everybody that I got.
All right.
So
thank you, everyone.
I think some upgrading people aren't mentioned here, if there were any from like late February.
I guarantee you there were some.
Yeah. So sorry. We'll make sure we get you on the next
you
one.
Were, you were lost right but now. Not forgotten.
No,
we are going to find you again and you will be shouted out on the next Patreon episode.
Yeah, and if we missed your shout out somehow, and
also you let us know and we will get you.
Yeah, we'll get you. Drop a message in Discord, the special patron Discord, or in Patreon itself. We will see that and we will get you. It's only happened a couple times in the past.
Yeah,
very few and far between. And it was like weird, like the email didn't come through or like something like that.
Yeah,
like happened. It's not all up to us, but yeah, like we said, just let us know. We'll get you. And that'll do it for this episode, I think. Go to patreon.com/dungeoncast to go participate in all this cool patron central stuff. It's like the best way to support us monetarily. We have like deals with our podcasting distributor, and obviously we take advertisements which won't show up on episodes in Patreon, and just like our own baked in ads like this one. But the idea is that like all that stuff is fleeting. And our patrons are eternal. Well, at least we try to keep you guys around.
As eternal as possible.
Yes, it's eternal as comfortable for you. So come donate to Patreon and help Will and I live and make cooler stuff.
Indeed.
And we would appreciate it a whole bunch. We'll keep making content for that. The next Super Short Saga should be done like next week, I hope. I could give myself these long lead times because I'm always super busy. And we'll catch you on the next episode of the Dungeon Cast.
All right, let's call it a game. I'll talk to you guys later.
Bye.
The Dungeon Cast.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Buntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Buntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.